Now, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement officially took effect on Wednesday. President Trump signed the agreement earlier this year. It replaces NAFTA in setting the rules of trade in North America. The administration says the USMCA will help keep manufacturing jobs in the U.S. and provide stability for farmers who are dealing with tariffs during the ongoing trade dispute. But open questions remain on things like labor standards in Mexico and Canadian metal exports. Mark Koplovich is a professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison. His research focuses on international trade and finance. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Always great to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Well, Mark, the USMCA kicked in 2 days ago and boom, everything changed. We flipped a switch, right? Or does it not work that way?
No, it doesn't really work that way. I mean, there's an enormous disconnect. There often is with trade agreements, but in this case, even larger than normal, I think, between the political marketing of this and the economic reality of it. I would say from what I've seen and read and followed on this, that it's about 90% what was in NAFTA. And the 10% that's new, most of what's new was actually in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was the trade agreement that Trump actually withdrew from when he first came into office that the Obama administration had negotiated. So the political reality is this is being sold as a huge transformation of trade between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And there are some changes, but the reality is it's actually going to have very little overall effect on the U.S. economy. And unlike most trade agreements, it's actually going to leave the overall U.S. economy a little worse off.
How so?
So it actually increases barriers to trade in many cases, right? So one of the big components of this is an increase in what's known as rules of origin, which is local North American content for steel in particular in auto production. And so what that's actually going to do is it's going to increase the cost of steel being produced in cars in North America. The reason behind that is that Trump and Bob Lighthizer and Peter Navarro, the key trade officials in the administration, are very keen on bringing manufacturing back to the United States and kind of breaking what are known as global value chains, right, where pieces of manufacturing are done across countries. But that's actually going to raise costs for consumers, right? So the projections that are out there is the rising prices on steel inputs and some of the increases in wages in Mexico that are also part of the agreement are going to raise costs. And that's actually going to possibly reduce U.S. exports for cars. But what it's definitely going to do is raise prices for American consumers on automobiles.
But the trade-off there, the idea, at least the argument is, okay, but we've got better paying jobs in the metal industry, the steel and aluminum producing in particular. So yes, we might lose a little there, but we gain a lot for some maybe cities that rely on that kind of manufacturing.
It's not really clear that's going to happen, right? So that's the part of the underlying theory, I think, is that. But when you're putting up trade barriers, most American manufacturers are importers and consumers of things like steel and aluminum. And so if you're raising prices on key inputs of production for U.S. manufacturers, the net effects on employment in the steel and aluminum sectors, it's not clear actually there's going to be an increase, right? Because that means that American producers and American consumers are going to be reducing their consumption of higher priced steel and aluminum. So it gets complicated, right? But when you crunch the numbers on this and look at the overall effects, the estimates that I've seen suggest that there's going to be a very tiny, if any, negative effect on overall GDP, and that the employment impact is also going to be pretty minimal.
Talking to Mark Koplovich, professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, about the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, the replacement, the update to NAFTA that kicked into effect this week. Mark, looking at manufacturing here in Wisconsin, we're a pretty big manufacturing state. People think of companies like Harley Davidson, producers of farm equipment, farm machinery, things like that. Are they the kind of companies that might be hurt by those changes in metal supply chains?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's sort of two things. So one is that, which is, if you're a manufacturing firm and key inputs of production are rising in price, that raises your costs, right? And it makes it hard for you to be competitive in exporting goods around the world if you're facing rising costs. The other thing is this really doesn't open up new markets, right? So this is replacing NAFTA, which is the free trade agreement we've had with these same two countries since 1994. So, you know, what we were originally going to have in 2017 was the Trans-Pacific Partnership that was going to do most of what's in this new USMCA with Canada and Mexico, but then also reduce trade and investment barriers with 9 other countries in the Pacific Rim. And so, you know, what manufacturers in Wisconsin and elsewhere are not getting is increased access to the Japanese market, the Australian market, the Vietnamese market. You know, it's sort of, this doesn't really further reduce trade barriers and increase market access to Mexico and Canada for American producers. And it also robs them of the benefits of possibly accessing other export markets.
Well, let's look at agriculture and dairy in particular. One of the big complaints, including from Wisconsin dairy farmers, was that Canada had this system that prioritized some of their own dairy products. And I've talked to cheese producers who say historically Mexico had changed things that you couldn't use the name of a European cheese on a Wisconsin cheese. They had to make up new names. Does USMCA clarify any of that? Does it end up helping, say, that Wisconsin dairy farmer and or cheese producer?
A little bit, and it's not nothing, but again, it's kind of small. So the Canadian government definitely made some concessions on things like import quotas they had a series of import quotas and other restrictions on American dairy into Canada. Mexico is Wisconsin agriculture's largest export market, dairy's largest export market. Canada's number three. The numbers I've seen suggest that the USMCA is going to increase access into the Canadian market. It's going to assure access of about 3.6%. The rules in the TPP, which this actually replaced, would have guaranteed access of about 3.2%. So that's $600 million. That's not nothing, right? But it's not a game changer and a sort of transformative large access that suddenly American dairy producers and Wisconsin producers in particular are going to have a 5, 10, 15, 20, a 20 point change in market share in Canadian consumption. So it's better than the status quo, but again, it's sort of modest. And again, it's sort of part of the bigger picture that if you put these small, modest gains in particular sectors, then the overall effect for growth and employment on the U.S. economy is slightly negative and certainly not transformative.
Mark Koplovich is with us, professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison. We're talking about the USMCA, the trade agreement that replaces NAFTA. It officially took effect this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does this affect your livelihood in one way or another? Do you work in manufacturing, agriculture, or another sector that's being impacted by this new agreement? Do you have a question about the effects of the changes from NAFTA to this new thing? Are there things you still think need to be resolved in the way we trade with, especially our neighbors, Mexico and Canada, and maybe beyond? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Mark Koplovich, talking about what's changing and what isn't changing with the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal taking effect earlier this week, effectively replacing and updating NAFTA. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been watching what's changing here? Do you like the changes? Do you think more changes needed to be made? President Trump at some points had threatened to just pull out of NAFTA altogether. Would you have liked to have seen that? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Greg is with us in Sheboygan. Greg, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, is it possible if a new president comes in, could he go to the Congress and the Senate and just negate everything that Trump has done? I mean, we got to have that done. I mean, it's got to be done. I mean, seriously, the guy is not a very good businessman. He's filed bankruptcy 6 times. He's not making good deals. He's jumping out of every agreement we ever had and making enemies of all our allies. I mean, crying out loud.
Greg, thanks a lot for that call. First of all, is this a no-backsies arrangement, Mark? Can a new president just pull us out of this deal?
So, you know, this is something that had to be approved by Congress. And it's interesting. So Congress has ultimate control over international treaties, but also ultimate control over trade policy. But since the 1960s, they have delegated more and more of it to the president. Right. So we're 3 years into the Trump administration's trade war on various fronts with China, with our North American allies, with the European Union. The bills and rules under which Trump is making all of these decisions are things that Congress could actually change at any time. But there hasn't been a coalition really to do that. I think for, you know, the main reason is that, you know, both on the right and the left of the political spectrum, for different reasons, there are opponents to free trade, right? And there are, as we've talked a lot in past times I've been on here, trade is good in the aggregate for growth and for wealth and welfare in a country like the United States, but there are enormous distributional consequences, right? There are some sectors and individuals that win and some sectors that lose. And so when you think about politicians trying to get reelected, that, you know, you get a lot of politicians on both sides of the political spectrum that don't want to step on trade as a controversial topic and are happy to kind of punt it to the president. And historically, we've thought that was good because the president would think about the country more as a whole and what's good for the country as a whole and would focus more on free trade than, you know, an individual representative in a specific geographic district that might want to protect a certain industry and whatnot. So Congress could step in. I think what we would definitely see if there was a change in administration come January is walking back a lot of the threats to, say, withdraw from the World Trade Organization, an end to the use of these national security tariffs, right? So the steel and aluminum tariffs with Canada, Mexico, Korea, et cetera, the justification for them is from a 1962 law where the president can impose steel tariffs when there's a surge in imports and there's a threat to national security. Right? And there's been no surge in imports. There's a kind of long-term decline in the U.S. steel and aluminum industry because of global competition. And it's very clear that the national security argument, when we're talking about our closest NATO allies like Canada, doesn't really hold. So I think you would see a Biden administration certainly re-embracing and engaging with the World Trade Organization and engaging in removing the kind of aggressive protectionism. I don't know if you'll see a renegotiation of the USMCA. I could imagine you could see a Biden administration saying we're going to re-enter the TPP, and then that would effectively replace the USMCA because Canada and Mexico already belong to that and we don't.
Greg, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about international trade and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement just came into effect this week, effectively replacing NAFTA. Mark Koplovich with us from UW-Madison. Mark, that distributional element of this, we've talked about in the past, the idea that overall free trade might help us out to improve prices and things like that, but some people get hurt and that damage is often really devastating to a local community if they lose that industrial base. What do you do to mediate that, to limit the damage, to help people who are hit by the downside of this?
Yeah, the trade agreements get a lot of blame, but really a lot of these trends are long-term trends in the structural change in the U.S. economy over the last 50 years. And so tariffs don't really, they can slow that down a little bit, but they're not going to, stop those big trends. The thing we haven't had in the U.S. is, you know, domestic policies, social welfare policies, investment policies, infrastructure policies, subsidization of education and retraining. There's a lot of set of policies that governments, you know, at the state level, at the federal level, could put in place to try and offset the negative consequences, right? The simplest but most politically sensitive one would actually be to directly, you know, pay people who have lost their jobs from the increases in aggregate wealth in the United States. Right. So trade over the last 60 years has actually raised household wealth by about a third across the country on average. But we don't redistribute that wealth from the winners and losers to the losers and the economic losers in American society because it's politically controversial. But there's a lot of domestic policies we could put in place. It's pretty clear, like the U.S. trade deficit has widened under the Trump administration, and you haven't really stopped any of these trends, that tariffs are kind of, they're politically maybe salient, but they're a stopgap for changing these long-term transformative shape of the U.S. economy. And most of the policies that might make a big difference, we haven't really tried over the last 40 years.
Just in our last minute, Mark, what is still up in the air when it comes to trade issues between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada? This agreement doesn't solve anything in just our last few moments, or solve everything.
No. So, you know, the Trump administration is talking about reinstituting another round of the steel aluminum tariffs. And I think the bigger picture with Canada and Mexico is the Trump administration is also threatening to withdraw from the World Trade Organization and has basically brought to a complete stop the court system in the WTO, where countries resolve disputes. And Canada and Mexico, along with Japan and the European Union and Australia and other major countries, are kind of moving on trying to find alternatives. So I think it's part of the bigger picture with Canada and Mexico that the U.S. isn't really leading in setting the rules of the game of global trade anymore. And it's not clear that we're still seen as a reliable partner, right? So I think the USMCA, because the Trump administration is still talking about more types of tariffs and protection, is still not seen as something that has settled the dispute and settled the problems between these three countries.
Mark, thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Mark Koplovich is a professor of political science at public affairs at UW-Madison. You can keep the conversation going over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can pick up this conversation about what changes and what doesn't change as the NAFTA replacement, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, takes effect.